Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. Once again, the price of gold is setting records. It was quoted in London this morning at $351.50 an ounce, up almost $7 from Friday's close. Afterwards, the price settled down a bit, but remains around the $350 level. It exceeded $351 in Zurich and touched that point in Hong Kong. Persistent concern over international economic conditions is one basic reason for the rise of gold, and Bernard Redmond reports that high Western officials held a closed-door conference in Paris over the weekend to discuss monetary instability and related matters.
The talks were all but top secret. Officials wouldn't even admit publicly they took place. But it was confirmed authoritatively that finance ministers and central bankers from the five leading industrial nations, the U.S., Britain, France, Germany, and Japan, did tackle the economic turmoil of the West. For the U.S., Treasury Secretary William Miller and Federal Reserve Board Chairman Paul Volcker were here. Such gatherings are not unusual just before the annual meeting of the International Monetary Fund and World Bank, which will open in Belgrade in 2 weeks. One of the big problems is the war of interest rates among the five countries. Related to that are tighter credit policies and the fight on inflation. Those present at the meeting noted the sharp rise in gold prices and the problems of the dollar as signs of a worldwide uneasiness that needs urgent attention. Bernard Redmond, CBS News, Paris.
The International Monetary Fund in Washington has issued a generally pessimistic forecast of economic trends over the near term, and we'll hear about that from George Herman.
The sober, even gloomy report from the International Monetary Fund predicts a deeper-than-expected recession accompanied by continuing high inflation, and it blames this unhappy state of affairs on the latest OPEC oil price increase. The report says there's little to do but to swallow our losses grimly, accept a period of tightened belts, and avoid so-called cures, which could turn out to be worse than the disease. Specifically, it warns against a tax cut to fight this recession. It suggests that we rely instead on the automatic stimulus of a rising budget deficit, the deficit which will come from shrinking tax revenues and increased unemployment insurance and other relief programs. Without mentioning the fact that this will be an election year in America, it merely adds darkly that this will obviously be a difficult course to follow as the recession makes itself felt. George Herman, CBS News, Washington.
The Senate and the House today commence work on the budget for fiscal year 1980, which begins October 1st. The budget committees of both chambers are calling for higher spending and a larger budget deficit than Congress tentatively approved last May. This is the first anniversary of the Camp David Accords between Israel and Egypt, and delegations from those countries are about to start negotiating again in Washington. Dan Raviv in Israel reports what they'll be talking about.
This time, the issue is supervision over Israel's withdrawal from the Sinai Desert and over the limited forces zones on both sides of the withdrawal line. United Nations peacekeeping forces did that job until their mandate expired 2 months ago. Now Israel and Egypt are turning to the United States for a replacement. Foreign Minister Moshe Dayan left for Washington this morning and told reporters here that as far as he's concerned, U.S. troops in the Sinai would be one possibility.
That would be acceptable by us, but I'm not quite sure that would be the answer, and I wouldn't guess now about the answer. I know that Americans usually, as a rule, do not participate unless the Russians participate too. They have some kind of agreement. I'm talking about the Middle East, about Sinai, Syria, and so on. But really, this is not for me to answer.
Dayan said the issue of international supervision is a sensitive one because Israel wants to be sure of its security as it gives up the Sinai. He was optimistic, saying Israel, Egypt, and the U.S. are all working on the problem with goodwill. Dan Raviv for CBS News, Tel Aviv.
President Carter is marking the first anniversary of the Camp David agreements with a statement saying that the successes of Egypt and Israel so far in overcoming three decades of animosity give us renewed confidence in facing the difficult tasks that still lie ahead. Mr. Carter is emphasizing his interest in the Middle East in other ways also, reported by Diane Sawyer.
The president has a scheduled meeting this afternoon with Egyptian Vice President Hosni Mubarak, and a White House source says there may be a special commemoration of the Camp David agreement as well. an event which may include Israeli Defense Secretary Azer Weitzman, who is in town for Defense Department talks. The rest of the White House week is packed with congressional and executive branch meetings, in which the president will be lobbying for passage of the Strategic Arms Limitation Agreement and serving as chief administration cheerleader for his scattered energy programs. And this may also be the week that the White House announces a new set of anti-inflation guidelines, which will reportedly ease the ceiling on wages while holding the line on prices. Diane Sawyer, CBS News, Washington.
The White House says Mr. Carter's physician, Dr. William Lukacs, has pronounced the president in excellent condition and reports that everything is normal. Mr. Carter has undergone two comprehensive physical examinations since he was overcome by heat exhaustion on Saturday during a foot race near Camp David. Ronald Reagan hasn't formally announced his candidacy yet for the 1980 Republican presidential nomination, but already, as we hear from David Dow in San Diego, he has been given a big lift in his home state.
California today remains the only state with a winner-take-all Republican presidential primary, and Ronald Reagan remains the Republican most likely to take all 168 votes next year, the largest block of votes in the nation. Reagan would have to fall on his face in earlier primaries not to take California, said one political pro. The assessment came after this weekend's state Republican convention in San Diego. By a 3-1 margin, Reagan forces clobbered an attempt to change the state's primary system to proportionate representation. Win a quarter of the state's votes, win a quarter of its delegates, and so forth. One leader of the repeal effort charged that this shouldn't be called winner-take-all, it should be called Reagan-take-all. Reagan is a natural favorite in his home state, and as long as an opponent stood a chance of winning at least part of the delegates, a race here might look attractive. Without that, it just might not be worth the money to challenge Reagan. David Dow, CBS News, San Diego.
Brush fires are still out of control today in some parts of Southern California. Yesterday, 19 luxury homes were destroyed in the Hollywood Hills Laurel Canyon area overlooking Los Angeles, and others were lost elsewhere. Firefighters from as far away as Maine and Rhode Island have been called in to help. Hurricane Henri, upgraded from tropical storm, is moving southwest over the Gulf of Mexico today. It's likely to hit the Mexican coast near Veracruz this afternoon. For many thousands of people in coastal communities of Mississippi and Alabama, the overriding concern today remains the devastation caused by Hurricane Frederick. It's enormous. Radio Kabul says the reason was ill health, but something more than that was evidently the cause of this weekend's sudden transfer of power in Afghanistan. Marxist President Nur Muhammad Taraki resigned and was succeeded by Prime Minister Hafizullah Amin, who is said to be even more Marxist than Taraki. Gordon Joseloff tells us what's being said about it in Moscow.
There are no firm indications what role, if any, the Kremlin played in the leadership change in Afghanistan or just how it views what has happened. Western diplomats here note that Taraki's fall from power came only 6 days after he visited here, after he and Soviet President Leonid Brezhnev were seen on Moscow television warmly embracing during a Kremlin meeting. The diplomats point to this as possible evidence that the leadership change caught Moscow by surprise. Others, however, cite reports from the Afghan capital of a meeting between the Soviet ambassador there and the new man in power before Taraki's resignation was announced. They say this indicates Moscow approved of what took place or, at the very least, was informed in advance. If the Kremlin is pleased by the takeover of a man widely regarded as much more hardline and more pro-Soviet than Taraki, it has so far not indicated publicly. Gordon Joseloff, CBS News, Moscow.
Reports reaching Pakistan from diplomats in Kabul, Afghanistan's capital, say the chief of the cabinet and President Taraki's bodyguard were among four people killed during a gun battle inside the presidential palace 2 days before Taraki quit. Another report from Pakistan says that the new president, Hafizullah Amin, is regarded as a revolutionary hatchet man determined to transform Afghanistan into a Marxist state as quickly as possible.
World News Roundup has been sponsored by Crocker Bank, the bank that is open longer than any other major California bank, and by Datsun and your nearby Datsun dealer.
Good morning. Alex Sullivan, Russ Powell, and KNX News Central at 7:13.
KNX News Radio, on the scene, on the move, in Southern California.
going to be a long, heartbreaking day for some Los Angeles residents who are waking up in unfamiliar surroundings this morning. They'll be looking through the rubble of their fire-ravaged homes in the Laurel Canyon area, assessing damage and deciding what to do next. 19 homes in the hilly area were leveled by the flames late yesterday, homes worth a total of about $3 million. It's believed arson caused the blaze, and four youths have been questioned by police. Among those who lost homes in Laurel Canyon are actresses Mackenzie Phillips and blues musician John Mayall. Many of the homeless residents spent the night in a Red Cross shelter set up at Fairfax High School.
The extent of the fire devastation can only be understood by talking with someone who suffered property loss in the blaze. KNX News Radio reporter Mike Landa has that story.
Hollywood Hills resident Charles Schneider talked with reporters as he was surrounded by smoldering ashes of what just a few hours earlier had been a home worth around $200,000. The property management executive says no one was home when flames engulfed the house on Grandview Road. He says he heard about the Laurel Canyon blaze on the radio.
I was on out of the house at the time when I heard the fire had started up here. The police wouldn't let me through, so I've been walking some Lookout Mountain Road. And I've walked all the way down the hill and up here, and this is it.
As he surveyed the total destruction around him, Schneider was at a loss to say whether he might rebuild.
I can't think of what I can do. Everything we have in the world, naturally, is here. I don't know what we're going to do.
Charles Schneider, a Hollywood Hills resident, left homeless by Sunday's Laurel Canyon fire. This is Mike Landa, KNX News Radio.